everyone, and welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and I'm here with Pete today. Hello, Pete.
Hello. Good afternoon.
So this is, I would say it's probably a rare opportunity that Pete and I get to actually just do a podcast with both of us, since usually we're kind of in a group whenever we do this. And Pete and I were talking a little bit about, you know, a lot of things before we started recording the podcast. And I think one of the things that we want to talk to you guys about today is, one, like, if you're a guy and you're wanting to seek therapy, how to, just kind of some of the things to expect and some of the challenges that we kind of see with guys, but really just to be able to help you take that next step into going to see a therapist and just going to talk to a therapist and knowing that, you know, things are going to be okay. And so specifically kind of targeting this towards guys that are seeking therapy or that are thinking about therapy or that know that they need therapy. And then the other part is different therapists that work with guys and some of the common challenges that we see and issues and some of the ways that you could just like think about working with males in particular. I don't know, Pete, do you feel like I did a good job summarizing that or?
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right.
All right. So, and I know that Pete and I will have a little bit different perspective on this, mainly because Pete specializes and works on various men's issues. So this is going to be a real treat for us to be able to talk to him about this. And I see men mostly in the capacity of marriage and couples counseling. So we'll give you guys a little bit different perspective in that route. I know that you do some couples work too, Pete. So we'll be able to explore some of those different avenues. So let's kind of start with what might bring a guy in to come and see you, Pete. What might be, or maybe some of the most common things that men might see you for?
Well, interestingly enough, where I think there's a lot of overlap between you and I as far as what we see, oftentimes the catalyst or the thing that's going to bring a guy into my office or to reach out and make that phone call to say, I think I might need to talk to somebody, is relationship issues. You know, whether they are whether it's a gay man or, you know, a man in a lifelong partnership of some sort, or married and heterosexual man who's in a, you know, again, a lifelong partnership or married, it's relational issues inevitably that will throw guys into a state of disarray. It's not always, but more often than not, that is often the catalyst. Either the relationship, they just had a breakup, or the relationship is very challenging right now and they're trying to figure out. It's not uncommon. I'd say maybe if it's relationally oriented, probably 50% of the time maybe, where their partner's pushing them to say, you need to get some help or you need to see somebody or I might leave or you know, this relationship is going to be in serious trouble if you don't do something about it. So that, I would say, would be where a lot, there's a lot of overlap or what's going to bring somebody in. So, yeah, relational issues.
That is not something that I would have known. So I'm glad that you said that. And you're right. There is a lot of that overlap where I get that comment all the time when I'm working with couples. And it's like, we wouldn't be here if she didn't want us here.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think that, you know, I don't want to be exclusive and say that's the only thing. It is certainly the primary catalyst, but sometimes it could be job related. It could be related to family or a child, whether that's an adult child or young child having issues. But very often it is relationally oriented. And if we think about it, even I think to some extent, young men coming up still, we're socialized in Western culture, particularly in U.S. culture, around an individualistic mindset and in particular as guys to, you know, be competitive, to be, you know, self-sufficient and independent and strong, and all of the general ideas of what we have of what it takes to be a man, kind of still, to varying degrees, still push back against this idea of admitting weakness or vulnerability. And so to reach out to a therapist and say, I need help, feels like it goes against the guy code or the masculine ideal. Right. And right. So that in and of itself is, I think, is why it's very rare for men to just kind of go, you know, I'm kind of exploring my life right now, and I think I'm going to reach out to a therapist and go, maybe you can give me a hand here. Usually the issues are things they've been struggling with. They've been fighting internally or trying to tough it out or looking for answers. Maybe they've been reading books, doing some stuff on their own, but they're typically trying to figure it out. And it's only when it bumps up against someone or something else outside of them that isn't working well enough that they start to go, okay, maybe I need to look to someone to possibly help me figure this out.
Right. And I think not only that, even talking about the relation issues and stuff, if I don't figure this out, like I've been trying to figure it out for a long time.
Yeah.
And if I don't figure this out, I could lose this person.
That's right. I could lose really this person. Important. I could lose this job. I could lose everything. I could, yeah, it is. It really is often a last resort or near a last resort for them at that particular moment.
Well, I think too, like a lot of guys have a certain expectation. So I don't know if you get this a lot. I get this all the time. In fact, out of the couples that I see where, you know, it's a heterosexual couple or anything like that, about 80% of the guys will ask me at some point or another, like, I feel like coming to therapy, like your only goal is to try to get me to cry. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting thing. But that's what they think is like, this is just Craig trying to trick me into crying in front of my wife or anything like that. And no, and it's great whenever they bring that up because it's a good opportunity to talk about, like, whenever you come to therapy, our goal isn't to get you to cry. Our goal is maybe to help you to get in touch with some other parts of yourself that you're not used to in a safe way. Sometimes that results in tears and sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't measure the success of a therapy session based on how much people cry or you know, oh man, this was like a 20 Kleenex session. So like I did some really good work or anything like that.
Right.
But I think that there's such a perception of that whenever we come into the therapy room, that the goal is to get me as emotional as possible. And like you said, most men in Western culture we're raised that being emotional is not okay. I know that's the way I was raised and that's the way that I am sometimes. Mm-hmm. I can remember this. I know a lot of guys can attest to this. My friends used to joke that I didn't have any emotions or anything like that. So the fact that I'm a therapist is really funny to a lot of my friends.
I'll bet it is.
Just to let some of the listeners know that. But it's so such a big deal, I think, that so often, like you said, there's that part where if I cry first, I lose. If I break down first, I lose. If I show like how sad I am or how hard this is, I lose. Right. Yeah. And instead we get a lot of guys in session that they crack jokes or they rationalize everything or like they're very problem solving oriented or anything like that. Like they just need a tool or they just need a skill that will be able to help them navigate through. And I don't know if you find that in a lot in your work with men.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when you were talking about, they joked that you didn't have emotions and now you're a therapist, it made me laugh. I am definitely on the other end of the spectrum on that, in that I'm a sensitive guy. I always have been. And that was an interesting dilemma for me growing up. But I think the core thing is from, you know, the age of 5, 6, 7 years old, it pretty much gets drilled into us what you said. If you cry, you lose. And I don't know how much that may be happening still on the playground or in the baseball field or soccer field or wherever, you know, boys are playing together. I can't imagine that that's completely gone at this point from the culture.
Oh, it's not.
I wouldn't think so. And there's some, and I know some people may hate this, or I think there is some biological imperative for it, both internally, hormonally, but also just in the socialization process around it and navigating all of that. And that's a whole different discussion I don't want to go down. But I think just the socialization process is important, if for no other reason, is because it's the primary rules that we learn to live by, no matter what our internal system is, because you and I internalized the same value system and the same way of operating within the male culture, despite the fact that, you know, we're different ages, I'm older than you, and different temperaments, we still learned the same code, and we still had to then be in the world, both the male world and the world at large, with that code in place, and act in a way that conforms with it, whether we like it or not, or whether it conforms with who we are authentically or not. And that still is part of who we are, even though, you know, again, you and I are both doing our own work, we're therapists and constantly learning about each other, and we definitely want to be more sensitive to the people we work with, male or female or whoever. So I just, to me, that was what was interesting about that. And so, yeah, problem solving is a very strong facet of working with guys, because again, that domain is where we are encouraged to thrive, not in the emotional realm, but in the more logical, rational, fix it kind of realm. Is give me the tools, show me how to problem solve. I'll give you the question, you give me the answer, and I'll try it out. And if I can make it work, I'm good.
Right. The mastery over something is almost more important than the process that you go through. Yeah,
that's right. It's winning. And
yes, it is. And mm-hmm. I think that this is drilled so hard into, I know it's drilled harder to me. I know you and I have talked, it's drilled hard into you too, like you just mm-hmm. said. My wife comes to me the other day and she goes, I just feel like we've been really disconnected lately. And like me as a couple's marriage therapist, I'm like, great. Like, what's been going on? Well, how did I mess this up? Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys that come in to see me, that's exactly where their mind goes too. Yeah. Right. So, so I immediately get to catch myself and be like, dang, Craig, like I'm falling into that same thing. Mm-hmm. And like her and I get the opportunity to have a dialogue about it. And oh yeah, like I've been really spacey lately. I've been stressed or thinking about X, Y, Z or different things. Mm-hmm. And I get the opportunity to step into the space that I didn't learn how to use growing up.
Yeah.
This emotional space that I was taught wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. But this emotional space that I step into allows me to share with my wife differently about what's going on. Mm-hmm. It gives me permission to talk about like how stressed I am or how worried I am about things or like my fear of failing at X, Y, Z or anything like that. It gives me the capability of communicating with her differently. And, you know, piggybacking off what you're saying, Pete, that's why so many guys seek therapy. Whenever I'm working with a couple or even like with guys individually, something almost always comes up. Is that if the couple or the marriage, they have a son or a daughter, then at some point or another, they tell me like, I cannot connect or I cannot relate to, you know, XYZ's name, right? You know, they're a child. And a lot of that is like, we as guys, we are not taught how to connect with children. Mm-hmm. We're not taught to connect with children in that way, because that's more of an emotional thing, right? We're taught to, mm-hmm. oh, like if they get hurt or something like that, you show up for them, you tell them to brush it off, rub some dirt in it, whatever. and like that's your role, is just to be there in case there's an emergency, mm-hmm. and just kind of let them go. And I do these same things with my son, right? Mm-hmm. Where if he falls down, I'll be like, don't worry, you're okay. Or like, he'll go out in the yard and I'll be like, yeah, go play on this, you know, ledge or something like that, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the worst case scenario? Is you're going to fall off? Like, you'll be fine. And yeah, then my wife's in the background.
You, yeah, if it like, hurts, you won't do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you might.
So like even at this young age, when we're recording this, my son's knocking on the door, 2 years old. So I am actually indoctrinating him into the male culture that mm-hmm. I'm a part of right now. And mm-hmm. a lot of times that's one of the things that guys come to see us about, is they're like, hey, I'm having a hard time connecting with people. I'm having a hard time connecting with my kids, mm-hmm. anything like that. Because if my son comes to me in 20 years and he tells me that he's having relationship issues, or he tells me that he's just really struggling with work or something like that, and I'm like, well, you know, things are tough right now, but they'll get better. You're like, you'll figure it out. Or, oh, hey, here's a great book to read. And if you read this book, that'll help you figure it out. You know, and in my mind, I'm like, well, yeah, I'm helping him be successful. I'm giving him the tools that he needs to thrive. When in reality, I'm pushing him away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I would agree with you that that's one of the things I certainly see in here. Typically the first 18 to 24 months is the hardest for men to connect with their children, because of that very thing, because that's typically the age where it's more nurturing, it's more supportive, it's more kind of basic needs kind of stuff, which, you know, they're traditionally, you know, moms are more intuitively connected to that. When you were talking earlier, you know, a little bit about some of the things you're doing, you know, and indoctrinating your son already in this male culture thing. And again, we're not saying it's bad or wrong. We're just,
I don't want my son to be a wimp. Right? Look at that. There it is again.
There it is again. Yeah. I think the idea is just to understand that it is and it exists, and we're trying to learn how to navigate it and talk about it in the abstract more so than whether it's right or wrong, good or bad. I think that's important to stress today. But my point being that generally, you know, again, it's that idea of win-lose versus where the typical way women are socialized is relationally, collaboratively, which is different. So men, competitive, win-lose, independence. Women or girls, it's collaboration, relation, connection. And I don't work with couples anymore, and just recently kind of moved out of that. But when I have worked with couples before, and even too with either one of my clients, whether they're male or female or, you know, wherever they are, I always talk about couplehood in heterosexual relationships in particular as having that dynamic, that's going to be there. It is two different cultures coming together, trying to share a life. And it's important to understand those fundamental pieces, that these are two cultures that are trying to communicate, collaborate, and get along. And the very nature of the cultures themselves work against each other fundamentally, yet they are complementary to each other and have things to offer. And so I always contextualize it that way so that people can start to say, okay, it's not right or wrong or good or bad. It's just, these are the way that they typically work. And now that we understand them, how can we help you to learn to work with that other cultural framework in a way that builds the relationship and the partnership to what you actually want it to be? And how can you become a better person from what you learn from your partner in this relationship? So that, because there are things that you want from them, and there are things that they have to offer you to become a better person overall, which is what you're coming into therapy for to begin with.
Right. Well, like, this is a hard thing to do, and like, you don't, right? I can't come out and say this to a guy when they come into therapy because of the cultural aspects. But this is kind of the part that you want to say sometimes, is that what you're doing right now, it hasn't been working. So like, we need to try a different way. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, it hits that competitive part again. And it's like, well, maybe I'm just not trying hard enough. And maybe I just need to try hard. It's like, well, no, you've already been trying really hard. Mm-hmm. And like, it's terribly hard to learn something new. Right. Mm-hmm. Anything culturally. And like, we're just talking about like malehood culture, and like, you know, womanhood culture and everything. Then there's like racial cultures, and there's like greater overarching like religious culture. Then there's like different country culture and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. All those different things that are being embedded in us. And whenever a man walks into therapy carrying those types of things, having someone else tell them or try to help them along is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Right. It's incredibly difficult. And mm-hmm. I think the most important thing, if you're a guy listening to this and you're thinking about going to therapy, is that we therapists know that it's difficult, one. And two, like, as another guy, I really respect it whenever men are able to seek, you know, counseling and therapy, and when they're able to like come in and try these new things. Mm-hmm. In my mind, that's actually, it's more impressive than pretending like you got it all figured out.
Yeah.
And that you got all the answers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it's funny. I think for you and in the therapeutic situation, I think you probably wouldn't say it right away like you just did. For me, that is the first conversation I typically have with them. Well, simply because they're the ones who are calling me individually. So that's, they're already at that place. They've already recognized that things aren't working and something needs to change in everything they've tried. Because I know I am often, if not the last resort, that there's a whole lot of stuff they've tried prior to this. Mm. And so for me, that's the conversation we have. And you know, if there's one thing I communicate today is, if you are thinking or considering, you know, reaching out to a therapist, just know that there's a whole bunch of other guys before you who did everything they could to think that, you know, they could do it every other way. But if the idea of therapy is just knocking on the door, then yeah, more power to you if you have the courage and willingness to make that effort, because it does take a lot of courage to break against cultural norms and say, wow, I can't do this alone anymore, and everything I'm doing isn't working. And I think that's very empowering to say, hey, it's okay. It doesn't make you any less of a man or a guy to go, I can't do this on my own. And the irony of that to me too is, there are various times in our lives as men where we had other men who kind of showed us the way, whether it was a coach, a teacher, a mentor, a business partner, you know, someone that at least gave us hints or ideas or kind of nudged us along. And yet we still resist inherently the idea of asking for help or seeking out help or feeling like I have to ask another guy for help. I'm not sure, you know, because it's so deeply ingrained in us to not do that.
Right. Right. And I love what you just said right there. And I'm just kind of like processing it for a second. Like, mm-hmm. we have learned from other people, other guys, how to do things. And yet it is still ingrained in us that asking other people for help is not okay. And the first thing that pops up is like the directions thing, right? Like stopping and asking for directions, right? Yeah. The stereotypical thing here in mm-hmm. Western culture is that guys will not pull over and ask for directions whenever lost. And there's a lot of truth in that. I used to brag to people that I was okay with stopping and asking for directions. Right. It is like so ingrained in us, but like you get people like my dad's like this, my stepdad's like this, my brother's like this, where they won't do it. they will not stop and ask because like of how strong this part is. And I guess I just never really thought about that. And I think that if there's one thing that maybe is something that helps us get past that, or to kind of even approach that part of ourselves, is that by asking for help, we actually put ourselves in a better position to be able to do things on our own in the future. You know, like if you can come to therapy and you can learn how to, you know, have a different type of relationship with your son or daughter, or you can learn to have a different relationship with your spouse, that you learn how to do that and you get that for the rest of your life. You get that new skill, you get that new ability. It's actually learning how to do it and stepping into it. And I think what's so hard is I tell people this all the time, and I'm sure you do too, is that you never had an experience that has taught you how to do some of the things that you'll learn in therapy.
Right.
You've never had that. If you're seeking therapy, you've never had the experiences in your life that have led to you learning how to do. So it's not a failure on your part or anything like that. It's it's not that you missed a class. And like, if you would have just, if you would have made it that day, you would have had all this figured out. That's not what it is. I feel like that's what it is. Sometimes is we start to feel like if I can't solve the problem, there must be something wrong with me.
Yeah, that's it. And I think that hits the nail on the head. It's if I can't figure this out, there must be something wrong with me. And that is antithetical to being a strong, confident, you know, independent guy. And it's just, it is, it's very ingrained in us from a young age. It's that competition kind of thing. I have to win, which means I have to do it on my own. Can't rely on anybody else, and on and on and on. And it's not, it's just not true. Because all through life, that's kind of how we've gotten things. Even from a book, if you read a book, somebody wrote the book, somebody put down the information that I'm now consuming. So there is no getting through in life without getting some knowledge, information, support, whatever, from someone else in some way, shape, or form. You know, in the earliest stages, it was dad, stepdad, uncles, grandfathers, whatever, other men in our life who either were there or that we needed there to give us some of that guidance, or teachers, coaches, whatever. So it's a constant thing, and it's just a matter of being willing for just a few moments to acknowledge that doesn't emasculate us or make us less manly in any way, shape, or form. And I liked something that you said earlier too, that we, you know, I wanted to circle back to real quick is, yeah, for me too, the measure of a therapy session is not whether I can get a guy to cry or not. It's, hey, if he does, that's fine. If we get to that, that's fine. If he doesn't, so what? That's not the goal of therapy, is to see if we can get you to your tears. It's can we have a candid conversation about the things that are hard to talk about and help you get the tools that you need to make your life what you wish it to be, whatever that may look like. So is it crying? Maybe. Is it saying something that I've never told anybody before? Maybe. Is it just talking about what's going on in our day-to-day lives and having somebody provide some feedback and maybe a different perspective and give you some tools that, as you were saying, Craig, that I didn't miss a class. It's just, nobody ever offered these particular types of tools for me.
I've never felt comfortable enough to do that.
That's right. And so it could be just as simple as that. Okay, so in this situation, here are some thoughts or ideas to consider. And it's always based too fundamentally on what feels right for you, what fits with your moral values, your personal perspective, whatever that may be. It's within that framework of what do you think fits for you as a guy, where you are in your life and in this particular situation in which you're seeking perspective and you're coming to therapy. How can we then leverage that and leveraging the strengths you already have?
I think that there's something wonderful that I've learned about doing my own work as a guy. And some of it is one, just the awareness of some of the stuff that's going on and like how it impacts me. But two is the realization for me personally that that's not how I want my wife and my son to experience me. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to experience me in such a way that I have to always be right, that I always know the answer, mm-hmm. that my word is the final say-so, mm-hmm. that I can always figure out how things work, or that I always have a plan, or that I always know where we are. Like, I don't want them to experience me that way, especially because right. my son, I don't want him to grow up like that, feeling like he has to have everything figured out. And right. if he doesn't, then there must be something wrong. Because mm-hmm. I tell you right now, people don't have it figured out. And usually the people that act like they have it figured out, I'm really skeptical of.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody acts like they have it all figured out and they're very strong in their proclamation of that, I'm with you. I'm going, I'm not so sure that that's probably the case. You might be an expert in this particular area or this field or whatever it is, but I'm not sure that you have the whole thing figured out. So,
well, there's a certain amount, like we're attracted to people that are humble. And I think mm-hmm. men are even more attracted to people that are humble. And what I mean by attracted is we're drawn to them. Right. Like whenever we can see other guys that are able to humble themselves whenever they do things wrong. I mean, if you think about it, we usually don't think a ton less of them for being able to do that. I mean, unless your experience is different, Pete, but usually I think more of them. I'm like, wow, they're able to come to me and tell me that they did this and this wrong. That was actually really a really big deal for them to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of difference. It's not to say that I don't find that. I think in my generation, you would probably find that less. That would be, I think, here's what I'll say about that. I think in my generation and a little bit, guys a little bit older than me, and I'm 54 now, that what you would find is a mix that on some deeper level, that would be true. Mm-hmm. But there's also an inner conflict around that that says, yeah, that's great. I could never do that. Or there's a part of me that feels drawn, but there's another part of me that feels like repelling against it and not wanting to be seen with that guy, especially have other guys see me with a guy like that, because I don't know about that. However, like I say, I think fundamentally inside, it is what we're drawn to. Even guys of my generation or who may have struggled with that more so. And I think that's just part of that's just the way society was when we grew up versus maybe perhaps what you grew up with.
Right. Well, I think and that may be true. I think of like being in the workplace whenever I've had a boss that has come and said something like, hey, like I realized like I made a mistake with this, or, you know, like whenever I said this, like that was a little bit out of line whenever I did that or something like that. Whenever they're able to come to me and say that type of thing, I have more respect for them. Mm-hmm. And part of this could be, I'm going to do a shout out thing. And at the same time, mm-hmm. show a little more of my male culture. So there's a podcast I listen called the Jocko Podcast, and Jocko Willink was a United States SEAL and a Navy SEAL, and he trained other SEALs and different things like that. And he was in charge of this operation, I believe it was in Afghanistan. And he talks about this awful incident where it's called a blue on blue or a fratricide, where friendly forces kill other friendly forces in an accident. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was overseeing an operation from the command center. And he said that this happened with his guys on the field. And wow. he was, he needed to write up a report. He's getting ready to be in front of a panel of his bosses and like everyone that was mm-hmm. part of the operation and everything to figure out whose fault this was. Cause that's a mm-hmm. guy's thing, right? Whose fault is this?
Yeah.
And one of the things that he said is he goes, I was thinking about like everybody's fault it was. And he goes, you know what? It wasn't any of their faults. It was my fault. He goes, this is my mission. I was in control of everything. I was the person in charge. And that's what he said he did. He went there and he said that this was my fault that this happened. And this is what we're going to do to change it. And this is what we're going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again. Because whenever I did this or we did this or anything like that, those were the things that contributed to this. So I'm going to make sure on the next mission we don't do this. And it turned out to be a great thing that that happened. It actually ended up him writing a book and stuff like that about it and creating this principle. But the thing was that he was humble enough to come to that conclusion that it was his fault. And then not only that, go a step further and actually admit to it. And all of us kind of know those people in our mm-hmm. life where mm-hmm. they blame their issues on circumstances or on other things and everything yeah. like that. And mm-hmm. even if it's legitimate,
yeah,
we just don't like it as much. It's a little yeah. more cringeworthy for a guy. Whenever, yeah. Someone blames a circumstance or they blame something else. And mm-hmm. I think that's definitely more of a male thing. Mm-hmm. And so like, and you're right, maybe it's more of a generational thing, but whenever a guy can come to me and they can talk to me about some of the things that they know that they're doing wrong or that they've done wrong or that, mm-hmm. Hasn't helped it. I have a certain level of admiration for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I do too. And I think there's definitely a respect. I think a lot of it also has to do with how it's done. Whether there's a sense of responsibility, and I think that's a piece of where you're coming from, what you're describing, mm-hmm. when you describe the seal and what he did, is there's a sense of accountability and responsibility that he is taking. And so when a guy does that, when another man does that, it is seen because of that sense of personal responsibility. So in talking about this Navy SEAL, again, thinking about what makes it so, as you put it, attractive, or what we're drawn to, is that sense of willingness to take personal responsibility and accountability for what happened. And there's a sense of strength that actually comes from that, that we see embodied in it, I believe, that is what draws us to it. So, on the one hand, there's a level of humility that's there, but it's not a, oh, I'm sorry. There's a, you know what? This happened. I realized that I did something and, I could have done it this way, whatever. But there's a sense of strength conveyed in this idea. And the reason that I think we are drawn to it is it's that duality of there's strength in the humility or in the responsibility and accountability that's being embodied in that moment. It's not sorry, I don't know what happened. I don't know. There's a sense of not only do I recognize, but I am willing to, if I don't know how to solve it, I am going to make it my mission to ensure that this doesn't happen again, or that I will do everything I can to ensure it doesn't happen again. And that's the piece, because it does get to the heart of the masculine dilemma of, is it okay to admit that we made a mistake, we screwed up, or that we're vulnerable? It doesn't feel vulnerable in that moment because of the responsibility and willingness to drive forward and solve the problem. So it tends to kind of feel, it's a more masculine way of being vulnerable,
right?
That we see that feels different to us. in many cases. Right. That's exactly what it is.
Well, I wonder, so we kind of talked about like men coming in and some of the challenges that they kind of face and even just kind of walking through the door. Do you feel like there's any other challenges that maybe we haven't spoken about?
Probably is. Nothing's occurring to me in this moment.
Nothing in this moment that you just put me on the spot for.
Right. Exactly.
The other part of this is if you're a therapist and you're working with a guy, what's maybe some important ways of engaging them? And I think that for me, one of the really important things is realizing that, especially like working on the emotional parts, if they have been really, really, thrown deep into the culture of being a man and it's not okay to show that part, is mm-hmm. allowing time for them to build that part, allowing the time and the space for them to do that. And it can be really frustrating sometimes as a therapist because we want things to go fast, right? We see like how hard this is and we want them to be able to kind of get to that place, but mm-hmm. they need time to build this spot that they can go to, this emotional piece that they can go to that they'd never had the opportunity to do before. So I'd just say being willing to allow that time and allow that safe space is such a crucial thing. Even if it takes a while and even if they're slow to move into it, it's like learning how to walk again. It's hard.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that you said it very well. It can be an area where they're really, it's like a whole new landscape or environment to explore. And yet it's like not having any understanding, not having a map, and then not being willing to ask for directions. And in essence, that's, if we're going to carry that analogy forward, that's essentially what we're asking guys to do. Some men in particular with regards to the emotional realm, because they're so used to being in their head and problem solving, right. It's all cognitive. So start with where they are. If you're a therapist, start with where they are and realize it may take a while and you're going to have to build a vocabulary and build an understanding. And if you do any kind of body work like I do, you're going to have to build some awareness. Although ironically, what I will say is sometimes body awareness is a faster route because then we don't have to put labels, emotional labels on the body sensations if they can at least start to experience things.
Right.
Because we all do have that physiological experience, whether we're aware of it or not. And you can actually go from the ground up somatically to say, well, let's not label the sensation. Let's not analyze it. Let's just be with it and see what it's telling us or see if there's something that comes out of it or something your body wants to do to express it or to get rid of the energy or move the energy. And if we start with that, sometimes from the bottom up, as I said, you can then build vocabulary. Oh, that is anger. Oh, that is sadness. Right. Oh, it's both, and build that vocabulary so that they can then communicate to those with whom they're in relationship to do that. So yeah, it takes time or trying too hard to get someone to move from to that arena is going to be counterintuitive.
Right. And if you ask too many questions, mm-hmm. you're going to activate the part of the guy that's like, oh, I should know this answer.
Yep.
And they're either going to feel really terrible that they don't know the answer or like they're doing something wrong, mm-hmm. or they're going to make it up. And they're probably going to make it up. So just be careful with the questions that you ask, mm-hmm. right? Because even me as a guy, like people ask me questions about like how you feel and stuff like that. Like just don't do it, right? It is a lot easier to start with the body because males have traditionally been especially if they're like involved in sports and stuff like that, much more oriented around their body and their physical presence. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times that is easier to tap into that part. And don't know, which I've kind of spoken about this before, the more and more you talk, the harder and harder it is for people to access different emotions and stuff like that. But going back to your analogy, I don't know why when Reese said this, I thought about this. It's like taking a guy and putting them at the edge of a desert and being like, look at this landscape here. I want you to go and explore this landscape. There's an oasis somewhere out there that I want you to get to. Here's a map, and it's a map of the completely wrong area. Right. And like, it's got like crap on it, and it's like torn and stuff like that. And you're like, this is going to be a great adventure. And like, you're going to have so much fun with this. All right, go for it. And, you know, and we're like, hey, they should be able to find this oasis. They should be able to find this part where they become aware of this and they're able to make these awesome connections and stuff like that. And really we're asking them to cross a desert and their map is all torn up. They don't have it, right? Because it's the map of the last city that they were just in. It's not a map of this new desert that you're asking them to travel. Mm-hmm. And you're telling them there's oasis that they've never seen. And they're looking all around at this desert and they're like, I don't think that there's any oasis here.
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. I love that you paint such a grim picture, but I think it is true. I think there's a lot of truth.
That's what it feels like. It feels like a grim picture.
Exactly. It feels like that. It feels like it. And by the way, yeah, you can't ask directions either. Cause if I ask you questions, you got to know the freaking answers, you know? And so I think I liked when you said that, cause to me, if there's one point I would drill home more than anything about this part of the conversation is, create permission to not know, and that it's okay. It's okay to not know, because that's curiosity. And when we invite curiosity, we invite the explorer and the adventurer within all men, that we have varying senses of adventure and exploration within us in whatever way that might look. And that's a wonderful landscape in which to explore, you know, no pun intended on that word, but just the idea of it being an exploration, and it's going to be exciting and interesting. There's so much to learn, and you're going to gather a lot of tools along the way that are going to help you build this map, because this map is unique to you, yet the oasis is there, and it's what you're asking for. And I'm here with you, and it's okay that you don't know, because I'm learning along with you. And you create that sense of idea that we're in this together, but yet he's leading the journey. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to frame it.
Yeah, and I think that is even greater picture. The one of the things that you just said right there too is the being in this place where like we don't know the direction, everything, and expecting things. Like, you're right. You're going to get guys that are going to be like, I don't know. And I think as a therapist, I used to always be afraid of the, I don't know, like, oh crap, I just like ran into a dead end here. And like, that's not a dead end at all. Mm-hmm. Right. Because how frustrating, like, I mean, I know some of you are listening to this might be guys, some of you that are listening to this might be gals. If you are listening to this and you're a guy, you know how frustrating it is not to know.
Yeah.
And like, that's not an emotionally dead place at all. It's frustrating. It's hard. It's difficult. And we as therapists, we get the opportunity to actually explore that area, just like Pete was saying. We get the opportunity to explore and unpack. Oh man, like whenever you don't know, that sounds like a really, really difficult place. Well, yeah, it's difficult. I hate it whenever I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. So like we get the opportunity to then have a dialogue about the not knowing, or like just what it feels like to not know. Or like I know for me, like whenever I don't know, like people talk about the sinking feeling in their stomach, different things. Mm-hmm. Whenever I don't know what to do in a situation, that's the feeling I get, mm-hmm. right? And as therapists, we can latch on to those feelings. We can create dialogue around it. We can create movement around it. Because for guys, not knowing is a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? It's a big deal for gals too, but it's a big deal for guys because of the culture that we've been, you know,
right,
inundated with.
Yeah, it is. It's, and again, if especially if we're wanting to explore the emotional landscape, that is a perfect opportunity to do so because of the inherent emotions that are attached or connected to that experience of not knowing. It could be scary. It could be frustrating. It could be both. It could be any number of things. There could be shame in there. In fact, there often is. And that's like typically what sits. So you typically, again, with a lot of guys, anger will sit on top. And then underneath that, you'll have shame, fear, maybe some sadness, other things potentially, or array of things. But the bottom line is, wow, there's an opportunity for emotion right there. Even if they don't have words for it or can't completely articulate, at least you can start down that path of unearthing what that experience is like.
And I think one of the things that you can do, and this actually goes beyond just guys, this is something that you can use for anybody. It's something that I've used before. You guys don't know where you guys are going. You guys don't have the map, right? Or the map's wrong and incorrect. So sometimes whenever you get stuck, you can relate it to a picture and experience that they understand with, right? I don't know why, for whatever reason or another, my head goes to like mechanics. Like whenever I work with people that are mechanics or like fixing up or working with cars, sometimes like I'll create that as part of the story. It's not that you're going through a desert. It's like you're trying to create like the perfect race car. You're trying to create the perfect car. Mm-hmm. And let's say that you're putting in the engine and you're doing all this stuff and you're just like, there's something wrong with this, that there is some type of issue. Well, mm-hmm. like in that kind of situation, what would you do if there was an issue? How would you solve this then? Right. And they start to walk you through that. So you kind of get that common language that you get to use to help them paint the picture, mm-hmm. to help them build the scaffolding whenever they don't know what's going on or they don't know how to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right. When they're like, oh man, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I know how hard it is whenever you don't know. Cause then you have to troubleshoot things. Then you have to, you know, do process of elimination and stuff like that. So I can understand like how frustrating that would be or how hard that would be. And mm-hmm. you just get an opportunity to help lay that work for them if they are having that hard time creating language or anything around that, right? Use the hobbies or the interests or anything like that. Because if guys don't have language, well, it's hard to talk about feelings, but it's a lot easier to talk about things that they feel more comfortable with, right? And relating it to feelings.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that I was thinking about when you said that is not only using analogies and metaphors and pictures and all of that, but the idea of being a problem solver. You know, at times it can seem like it's against the idea of, okay, we want to be an emotion, so we want to be, you know, more less logical and rational and analytical. We want to, but really, any guy who's very strong in problem solving and analytical and all that, we want to use that because not only has it been an incredible gift and strength that you've accumulated and gotten you to where you are, wherever you are in your life thus far, all the things that have worked well, but realistically, therapy and even understanding emotions is just another problem-solving skill. It's another way to utilize that to figure it out. It's just a different area of analyzing and problem-solving that you probably have not been introduced to before. So let's use those skills to our benefit to say, okay, like you said, the engine, let's take this apart. What part of this, how does this work? How do feelings work? How do they work in the body? How is this happening? What's occurring? What's my experience? What happened when I was growing up? And put the story together and build that car by understanding it.
Yep. The problem solving parts that you have may just be the tools that you have that are in standard units instead of metric.
Yeah.
And you need metric to do the work that you're trying to do now, but you don't have metric tools. Right. Mm-hmm. So, no, I love what you just said right there. The thing is too, it is really fun to work with men and to see them discover this new area because it's something that's been so squeezed out of us.
Mm-hmm.
That the discovery that it's okay to be in this area is yeah. truly something phenomenal to see as a therapist.
Absolutely. And if you are a father and have young children, particularly young children, but a child of any age that you're still living with prior to teenagehood, I mean, teenagehood's another area to navigate. It's different conversation again. But if you are fortunate enough to either have younger children or grandchildren that are maybe below adolescence, it is a perfect opportunity to really allow ourselves as men to tap into that playful, emotional, carefree side that we lost touch with when we were growing up with. Is part of that socialization process and part of that, as you were saying, Craig, squeezing that emotion out, that they are perfect. These kids or grandkids or nieces, nephews are perfect models of what that is before that happened.
Right.
And so being with them and seeing the world through their eyes and experiencing, especially if it is our own children, that's definitely what woke me up and allowed me to move through those developmental phases again in a much healthier way and more integrated way, was being a father to my son and seeing the world through his eyes and trying instead not to squash it, but to tweak it in my parenting and within myself in a way that still, you know, again, perfectly and imperfectly, he still got male culture from me, but I tried to be more balanced around it. And it's just a wonderful experience. And I can't stress enough how much of a gateway he was for me in that part of my growth. And even now as a grown man, he still is because of where he's at and the nature of that relationship.
Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
So like, this is a wide topic, and I know that we've only had a small amount of time to to cover this ground here, and I know that there's more. So, you know, if you do want to know more, like that's fine to reach out, or you can comment on this, and we can always respond to those types of things. But absolutely. One of the things that I also want to offer is, like I said, this is an area of specialty of Pete's. And maybe you're a guy that's listening to this, and like you're struggling, or you're listening to this, and you're like, hey, I'm ready to get a, you know, some tools that are in metric, and I'm ready to, you know, find this oasis in this desert and just figure some other stuff out. I'm ready to do this. Pete, can you kind of tell people, how they might get a hold of you if they're interested in exploring that with you?
Sure. My, website is New Insights STL. So that's Insights plural STL at newinsightsstl.com or 314-287-3088 or newinsightsstl@gmail.com.
Perfect.
I'm also in Psychology Today, so people can look me up there as well.
Perfect, perfect. And if you guys listen to this podcast, you guys have had an opportunity to hear Pete a couple different times. And I think that it's really awesome to be able to have you on here and to share some of the insights with this, particularly around this. And unless we were just shooting the bull before this, I don't know if we would have even thought to have this kind of conversation. So it was definitely needed, I think. So I appreciate
the opportunity.
I appreciate the opportunity.
I don't often get to talk about this specifically. And yeah, it is an area of specialty. I do see female clients also, and they're probably 50%, maybe 70% of my practice. But I do enjoy working with men a great deal. And this is an area sometimes that I think doesn't get as much attention as I think it deserves in our field.
Perfect. So thank you guys for listening to this episode. I hope that you guys found it helpful. And can't wait to talk to you guys next episode. So until then, I hope that you guys are well, and I hope that you all stay safe. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.